The Dan Patrick Show, weekdays from 10 to 1 on the Sports Leader, 96.1 WSBT.
Sports Beat continues on your home of the Fighting Irish, Sports Radio 96.1 WSBT. Notre Dame getting set to take on the Syracuse Orange in the Fighting Irish's home finale, and as we now know, the regular season finale with the Wake Forest game canceled the next week. Nate Mink covers Syracuse football for the Post Standard and Syracuse.com, and he joins us on WSBT Radio. Nate, it's Darren Pritchett. Good to be with you once again. How are you?
Doing very well. Pleasure to be on with you. We had one of our first snow days of the Syracuse winter today.
Oh, boy.
Not a lot, but it's here. So.
Oh, I apologize for that. We've already had some of that snow here in South Bend. Well, Nate, whether Syracuse wins or loses, just like us, we know the pay is the same. But when you cover a football team, it's nice to cover a winning football team. This has been a rough one with Syracuse right now with one victory. At the start of the year, did you imagine a season like this could happen for this football team?
You know, it's interesting. When we got the new schedule flipped around on us at the end of July, beginning of August, and they went to it a 10-game ACC schedule, you know, I just thought there was no way Syracuse was going to really be able to field an above 500 squad with an all ACC schedule, more or less. You know, you look at where this program's been at really for their time since joining the ACC in 2013. They've only been able to have one season above 500 in conference play, and that obviously was a couple years ago in 2018 when, you know, funny enough, the last time we were previewing a Notre Dame Syracuse game, it was probably the college football game of the weekend that year at Yankee Stadium. So I kind of forecasted that they were going to have an uphill climb. Now, to say that I expected them to be staring at a 1-10 season, I mean, no one saw that coming this year, even with some of the personnel deficiencies that they had from the preseason. So from that aspect, it's been sort of jarring to see. But you know, it's been an unusual year here. They had really the COVID thing hasn't tripped this program up so much as the injury bug, and that's really been the story more years than not under Dino Babers, and it really stung in some unusual ways this year. I mean, anytime you're in a position where you're dressing 8 scholarship offensive linemen for most of the season, and one of those offensive linemen is a converted fullback, that's not usual. You know, anytime your preseason All-American safety gets knocked out for the year because he collided with a teammate during pregame warmups, that's not normal. So there's been some fluky occurrences throughout the season, and you know, I think for a lot of folks here, they're eager to turn the page to 2021 as quickly as possible.
Well, it's year 5 for Dino Babers, Nate, and he's had one winning season since he's been there. So I'm curious, how secure is his job? And if you think he is secure, might some changes to his staff be coming?
You know, I think the AD has come out and said that he'll be back next year. I actually asked Dino if he envisioned another sort of major staff revision that they underwent at the end of last season, and he really thought the circumstances surrounding this year were just very, very different from where they were a year ago. And I think there is some credence to that. I think given how unusual 2020 has been with sort of the lost practice time in the spring and the disjointed summer and the whole offseason being turned on its head, that he really feels, you know, particularly on the offensive side of the ball, his new coordinator that he brought in, Sterling Gilbert, maybe didn't have a fair shake to really put his stamp on that side of the ball the way maybe you would ordinarily get a chance to do if things were quote unquote normal. Now, you know, the other change that he made in last offseason was obviously bringing in Tony White to be the new defensive coordinator. And while they have had a number of injuries, I mean, they're at the point on Saturday where they're going to be starting 5 or 6 true freshmen or redshirt freshmen on defense. For them still to be tops in the country in takeaways, despite all that attrition and turnover, I think it bodes well and certainly is a promising sign for things to come here. you know, whether there's a staff member or two that deflects elsewhere, that's hard to say. That always kind of depends on what happens elsewhere too, across the country. But in terms of a major shakeup, you know, I think most of those changes occurred a year ago, and I think they're going to go into 2021 with more or less the same, the same structure of the staff in place for next year.
Nate, I want to ask you about this run game because three touchdowns on the season, but if I'm not mistaken, the top two running backs both opted out before the season even started, and there's been shakeups a little bit in that backfield. So, what does the running game look like going into Saturday, and are they down to their fourth or fifth running back at this point?
Yeah, I mean they've been down to four and five pretty much since week two or three. You know, they you're right. You know, the top two in the preseason coming into the year left the team and opted out for COVID reasons. And then they lost their number three guy who had been elevated to the starting job, Jawar Jordan. They lost him to a season-ending injury early in the season as well. So they've been rolling for much of the year with this true freshman from Maryland, Sean Tucker, who, you know, has flashed at times this year. He himself has been kind of nagged at times throughout the season with a bit of an ankle injury. So they've had to go to number five before, and you know, that just kind of speaks to the whole state of the team, really, and where they're at this year. But you know, it's not so much the running back play. I think it boils down to the line play. And like I said, I mean, they've just had an exceptional and an unusual number of injuries to that unit. Like I said, I mean, they were tiptoeing that line for much of the season, where, you know, they really had to make a call on whether they wanted to go forward with some of this or not, or just kind of sit out and get healthy. And they decided to, you know, get creative with some of the personnel on their roster and put the product out there that they had. And, you know, it's been a grind. You know, they have not played well at times up front. And obviously, if you're not strong up front, it's going to be very difficult no matter who's in the backfield to get much of a ground game going. But they've, you know, it's really not one or two things with this offense. It's been the totality of that side of the ball for the better part of the last 2 years. You know, it has been quarterback play. It's been offensive line play. You know, it's been at times a lack of a weapon on the perimeter at wide receiver. You know, they have a lot of things to address and fix on that side of the ball if they're going to correct course here going into next year.
Talking Syracuse football with Nate Mink from the Post Standard, Syracuse.com, here on WSBT Radio. Thinking back to that game at Yankee Stadium, Tommy DeVito came in at quarterback as a replacement, was the starter at the beginning of the year, suffered an injury. So I know you've seen a lot of Morgan and Rex Culpepper at the quarterback position. I think you've kind of answered the question with the offensive line talk, but I'll ask it anyway. Could DeVito made a small difference in what the offense maybe has been able to do the last couple of weeks? And just a quick thought on what Culpepper has been able to do since he has taken over.
Sure, you know, I think Tommy would have made a difference out there. Now, whether or not it drastically turns the season around, you know, I don't know if I can go that far, because it really is more than just one guy that's kind of looking at why things have gone astray the way they are. You know, I will say that, you know, when Tommy was healthy and was playing, I mean, you know, they got beat pretty soundly by Duke. You know, and you look at Duke and where they sit in the ACC standings, you know, that's not necessarily a sign that you know they were all of a sudden going to be in for a 5 or 6 or 7 win year if their starting quarterback didn't go down earlier in the season. But you know, nevertheless, they've had to roll with, like you said, Culpepper and the freshman Morgan for much of the season. You know, Morgan got dinged up in that game a couple weeks ago at Louisville. Culpepper, you know, he's really your fifth year, your veteran guy who's been in the program since Dino arrived here in 2016, knows the offense. And so, you know, you feel good about how he can manage the game and just his all-encompassing knowledge of the offense. But, you know, there was a reason that they turned to the freshman when they did a couple of weeks ago against Louisville and against Boston College. And, you know, if not for that injury a couple of weeks ago at Louisville, I don't think you would have seen Culpepper last week against
NC State. You know, I think you would have continued to see Morgan out there, and his status for Saturday, I think, much like last week, remains up in the air, given the shot that he took against Louisville, and whether or not there's another freshman on the roster, Dylan Markovich, whether or not he continues to see snaps in practice, and if he gets thrown into the mix, you know, we'll see. I think there is a good chance you might see that kid on Saturday, especially if the game gets out of hand. I think one of the reasons why the staff decided to ride with Culpepper for as long as they did last week was because Syracuse was ahead and they had a real shot to win at the end of the game.
Nate, you've alluded a couple of times to the depth and just how creative they've had to get with some things, especially with the line. And I saw your article that you wrote this week about Chris Elmore, who moved from fullback. He's been playing left guard at the start. He was playing left guard at the start of the season. So can you kind of take us behind that story, how that move came about, and just how important it was for Syracuse even being able to play this year?
Sure, yeah. I mean, they got to August camp, like I said, really with not more than six or seven available offensive linemen. And that includes two true freshmen that just arrived on campus in June. And that includes, you know, a junior college transfer who hadn't played before, who arrived in January. So you're talking about a situation where, you know, you didn't even have five guys available that had played or had been in the program before last January. And so they asked Chris Elmore if he'd be willing to play at offensive guard back in August at the start of the preseason, and he agreed. And even he wasn't sure whether or not he wanted to play this season. I mean, it took some conversations and some discussions with his family and the coaching staff before he felt comfortable playing in this season, given the pandemic. And, you know, he ultimately agreed to play guard, and he, believe it or not, held his own in there. I mean, he's been one of the bright spots on this team in a year where there haven't been many bright spots. And he finally got a chance to return back to his more traditional fullback role last week against NC State. They finally have now their originally projected left guard back into the lineup, who had missed, you know, the first half of the season in Dakota Davis. So, you know, Elmore, really, I don't think it is hyperbolic to say that, you know, if he wasn't on the roster this year, you know, they would have had to make some serious decisions about whether or not they were going to go forward with some of these games, or if they were going to go ahead and throw a true freshman in there and play as that fifth offensive lineman. So Elmore has been a big piece to them just being able to do what not many programs have been able to do this year, which is go 10 for 10 through 10 games so far and play them all. You know, I look at some of these other teams around the country. You know, Mississippi State comes to mind. You know, they're under 50 scholarship players. Vanderbilt, for a time earlier in the season, they were right at that threshold of having enough players to play a game. You know, you look at their records, you know, they're not winning many games either. So, you know, for Syracuse to go through with this thing with fewer than 60 scholarship players throughout the whole season, you know, it's a sacrifice they made, and it's a small consolation given the 1-10 record that they're looking at. But, you know, if nothing else, you can hang your hat that you got through this season as clean as anyone.
Well, to piggyback off the bright spot moment here for Syracuse, an article I read today was talking about the incoming class that Syracuse is about to sign, and you know, say what you want about Dino Babers, but he's been a dog on the recruiting trail, and this is, from what I read, this is going to be the best recruiting class in the last decade for Syracuse. And there's a bunch of freshmen right now that are dotting the starting lineup in an important role, especially on defense for Syracuse. And now you're going to bring in, you know, a top 40 class potentially. So talk a little bit about the recruiting chops of Dino Babers and what he's able to do, and if, see if there's some, you know, light at the end of the tunnel here for Syracuse.
You know, we'll see with that. You know, I don't quite know they'll get up that they'll get that quite that high at top 40. You know, again, I think, you know, they've, as we've looked at, if you looked at recruiting trends over the last you know, 10, 15 years, they've, you know, more or less been residing in pretty much the same neighborhood over that span. I will say that I like what they have targeted in this class. You know, they specifically targeted linemen on both sides of the ball. You know, they always have the last couple cycles, tried to recruit more size, you know, particularly on defense and in that linebacker position. So they look for long athletes that have a little bit of size, that have speed, that maybe they're a tad undersized, but because they're longer and they're faster, they think that maybe if you put them in the incubator for 2 or 3 years, you put them in the strength and conditioning program, and then they come out as juniors and seniors, and then you have, you know, really, really good football players. And that's really, I think, the bread and butter for this program. I mean, the needs that they needed to get, I think they've hit on some of them. You know, they were able to get a quarterback as early in the cycle as they've had in a few years, with the kid out in California, Justin Lampson, who Louisville was in on him. So they feel good about what they've done at the quarterback position. And then, like I said, they definitely need to reload on both sides of the ball at scrimmage, given how behind they are on those positions the past couple years. And, you know, we'll see how those kids pan out. I mean, a lot of it, too, is just you know, being able to stay healthy and take care of their bodies and be able to be on the field so that they can develop. And, you know, they're playing a lot of freshmen this year, so a lot of those guys that they are playing never even had the benefit of going through a full offseason in the strength and the conditioning department. So, you know, they're optimistic that the experience gained with some of those guys on the field this year, now you combine that into the offseason development and the strength program, that you can start putting 2 to 2 together. And in the next year or 2 or 3, you know, you start to bear some of the fruits of the labor that has been a very challenging year for sure.
Nate, their defense seems to be pretty respectable, especially considering the fact that the offense doesn't help them out very much. What can you kind of – do you think that this 3-3-5 defensive scheme Syracuse uses, could they make things difficult for Ian Book and company Saturday?
Yeah, you know, sure. You know, I think they do enough back there. You know, they're starting to – it's interesting. Dino, after the last game, you know, you could really tell that they pressured NC State more than they were really pressuring some other guys in previous weeks. And I think that really comes down to, again, the fact that so many of these young guys that are playing are starting to grasp and digest more of the defensive system that – Tony White wants to run here. And you got to remember, they weren't able to really install this thing as effectively or as they would have liked to because of the lack of spring ball and the fact that everything in the summer was pretty much virtual and on Zoom. So, you know, they really are optimistic on that side of the ball. You know, they continue to force a ton of turnovers. That's really been their calling card the last 2 or 3 years. Syracuse, if you look at the numbers, they have been among the nation's leaders in takeaways. The big bugaboo for this team, as opposed to previous ones, has been third down. They just have not been able to get off the field on third down. And I look at a guy like Book, who's obviously been able to really do an exceptional job at extending plays and turning nothing into something. And that could bode for a long day for the defense. But, you know, they're getting better. And, you know, like I said, I mean, they're going to have to turn over their defensive line next year. But, you know, I really like a lot of the young pieces that they have in the middle at linebacker and the secondary. You know, what we all thought was going to be the strength of their team with a couple NFL guys in Cisco and Trill Williams, both of those guys obviously are off to the NFL now. That secondary has been shaken up quite a bit than what we thought it was going to be at the start of the season. And, you know, those guys are hanging on and trying to continue to bring it game in and game out. But, you know, like I said, they just have not had the type of time in the offseason development that you ordinarily would expect from some of those positions that you'd ordinarily like to see. You know, their safeties are just a bit undersized right now. You know, like I said, they're out there playing, but, you know, it's going to be, I think, a tall task on Saturday with really a very, very strong Notre Dame team up front.
Nate, one final question for you really fast. As someone that covers an ACC team, I'd like your opinion on this. In a college football season where Ohio State might play six or seven games, BYU may add an opponent from the Pac-12, who knows, down the line to improve their resume. Are you okay with what the ACC did this week, eliminated a game for Notre Dame and Clemson?
Am I okay with it? I guess. You know, I actually do think Wake Forest is kind of a tricky opponent given their offensive scheme.
Sure. Yeah.
There's no doubt those two teams are the best teams in the ACC. And if you want to make it fair going into December 19th, where you each get that week off, you know, I think that is probably the fairest thing the league could have done. And so from that vantage point, I don't really have an issue with it. I'm sure Wake Forest and some of those guys might be a little bummed out that they're not going to have a shot to take down Notre Dame before Charlotte or before the playoff. But Notre Dame, they earned everything they've got to this point. You know, they proved that in early November when they beat Clemson, and you know that rematch in a few weeks in Charlotte is again going to be something that has the eyes of the country on it. And you know, short of some unusual circumstances playing out here in the next couple weeks, you know, I think it's a pretty safe bet that both those teams are going to be in the Final Four this year.
He is Nate Mink, covers Syracuse football for the Post Standard and Syracuse.com. Always great to catch up with you, Nate. Greatly appreciate your time, and hopefully we can talk to you again soon.
Absolutely. It might be a few years before the next Syracuse-Notre Dame game, but hopefully I'm still here.
That sounds like a plan. Nate, thank you.
Thanks, Nate.
Thanks.
That is Nate Mink from the Post Standard and Syracuse.com joining us on Sports Radio 96.1 WSBT.